So I know what you're wondering, and that is why we're going to keep on talking about Midian, about Moab, and the reason we're going to keep talking about them is because there's more to say. So at some point last week, I know some of you weren't here, some were here, some who weren't here didn't listen, some who listened don't remember. I understand, right? Last week, at some point, I noted in passing that there just seems to be lots of confusion between Midian, Moab, Moab, Midian, and let's try to take a look and try to clarify what exactly the issue is between these two tribes. So let's begin the beginning of the parsha, so at least everyone will know that we are, in fact, learning Pinchas. Source number one, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe lemor, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen, Hishiv et chamati me'al b'nei Yisrael, b'kano et kinati b'tocham. So Pinchas was a zealot. Pinchas, he took, if you want to use the word, vengeance, and he saved the Jews at that point. Now, I do want to note that what happened at the end of last week's parsha was also this combination between these two tribes, because who was it that had come down into the camp at that moment? Benot, that was a question. Benot, okay. Source number two. Vayeshev Yisrael b'shitim, vayichal am luznot el benot Moav. They began to sin with the girls from Moav. And then, later on it tells us, v'nei ish m'bnei Yisrael ba v'yikarevet el achiv et hamidyanit. So over here we have the whole starting point. And that starting point is important because, and that's what we spent time with last week, is that it starts with the benot. Well, part of what we discussed was what does it really say there? But the sin which is taking place is the sin with Baal Peor. So we have this whole Baal Peor, which is being brought by the benot Moav. We have the sin of Baal Peor. And then at the very end, we hear about this Midianite who comes in. So now, again, we're going to see as we go on, from the very beginning, there was this interplay between Moav and Midian. So once again, starts with Moav here, goes on to Midian. So now, what did Pinchas do? Pinchas went and he killed this Midianite, and he killed this Jewish man as well. We don't learn their identities till the beginning of this week's parsha, when we find out that they are Zimri and Cozbi, respectively. So he goes and he kills the Midianite. Now, did the Midianite have anything to do with the Peor? And that we didn't see anything there, at least in the narrative, have anything to do with the Peor. And that's where things begin to get interesting here. So back in source number one, Pasuk Yud Bet says, V'chein, emor hinini noten lo ed briti shalom, v'aita lo lezaro acharav brit kunat olam, tachat, there will be a covenant forever. Why? Asher kinei le'elokav yichapero b'nei Yisrael. That he had this vengeance, or is jealous, zealot, if you will, for God, for his God. Maybe you hear his God as opposed to whatever was going on with the Peor. And he brought about kapara. Now that itself is very interesting. Why would Pinchas become a Kohen? Because he performed as a Kohen. What does a Kohen do? He brings about kapara. So what did he do? He brought about kapara. How did he bring about kapara? So this is where it gets ironic. He brings about kapara by killing Zimri and Cozbi. He brings about kapara. Okay, and that we're not discussing. V'shem ish Yisrael amukeh asher huka et amidyanit Zimri ben Salu nasi beit av l'shimoni, one of the leaders of Shevet Shimon. V'shem isha amukeh hamidyanit Cozbi batzur rosh umot b'nei av b'midyanhu. Now that's important because we just now learned that these are not two minor characters, two random people, that these are both people who are leaders in their own respective spheres, both coming from prominent families. Pasuk Ted Zayin, V'deber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Tzror et Amidyanim, V'hikitem Otam, Kitzorim Hem, Lachem, B'nichleihem Asher Niklu Lachem, Al Dvar Pa'or, V'al Dvar Kozbi, Bat Nisi Midyan, Achotam Amuka, V'yom HaMagefa, Al Dvar Pa'or. So this is very interesting because now it just now shifted and said, take revenge. Now, I could have said, take revenge against who? I would have said, take revenge, I don't know, once you're taking revenge, let's take revenge against everybody. Let's kill Moav, let's kill Midian, let's get rid of all of them. If there was one who was more involved, apparently it would have been, or it should have been, Benot Moav, because Benot is plural, and the Benot Moav are the ones who brought the Peor, and they're the ones who encouraged the Jews to be involved in the Peor. So therefore, anything that happened should have been directed towards Moav, but we learned that there was this one Midianite, now go and take revenge against Midian, and that really should be seen as somewhat strange. Why Midian? Why the war against Midian? Now, you could tell me, based on what we've already noted this morning, and that is that she's a leader, she's the daughter of a leader, so maybe there's some more significance in that, but let's leave that for a moment. Later on, in Perek Lamed Aleph, where the battle actually takes place, source 3, V'deber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Nikom nikmat b'nei Yisrael ma'et ha-Midyanim, go take vengeance against the Midyanim, Achar Tosef alamecha, V'deber Moshe la'am lemor, Chaltzum itchem anashim la'tzava yu al-Midyan, L'teit nikmat Hashem b'binyan, so it keeps on talking about revenge against Midyan. And Pinchas is sent, and so on, and so forth. So in Pasuk Zayin, V'tzbu'a Midyan, Pasuk Chet, V'et Malchei Midyan hergu, Et Chadleim, they killed them, V'yishbu b'nei Yisrael, Nishem Midyan, and so on. And at the very end, Pasuk Yidbet, V'yivol Moshe v'lazar Kohen, V'el Adat b'nei Yisrael, Et Hashvi, V'et Amul Koach, V'et Hashalal al-Machaneh. So then they took all the captives and all of the looting, if you will, all the things that they'd captured. Where do they take it? El Arvot Moav, Ashoy Yodani Richo, which is actually where they're staying at this point. So it's the only mention of Moav over here, which is only a geographical mention, not in terms of the people themselves. And it leads us back to this question. So why is all the focus and all the revenge and the war over here, why is this all directed against Midian when we would have thought, at least in the beginning, that they should have been equal? And if not equal, one would have thought quite the opposite, that Moav is the one who has the primary responsibility over here. So essentially we have a question, and that question is, so what is it that happened? Now, we're going to go backwards a little bit and try to figure this out. We could have gone from the beginning and forward, but we're going to go backward in stages. When Bilam spoke, prophesied, saw, whatever it was that he did, at the very end, he goes and he gives perhaps advice, but let's take a look. This is Perek Kaf Dalet, it's source number 4, and this is the very end, because you know there were a number of times that he spoke. V'tanini holech la'ami. So here are his parting words. I'm leaving. I'm going back to my people. Incidentally, it never really is quite clear, at least over here, who his people are. Vata hinini holech la'ami. So he says, I am going back to my people. L'cha i'atzcha asher yaseh ha'am hazeh la'amcha b'achrit hayamim. I'm going to give you advice on what this people, this nation, the Jews, Israel, will do to your people in the end of days. Of course, it's always tantalizing when the Torah uses achrit hayamim, end of days. So how far are we talking about? Are we talking after lots of days? Are we talking after a week, a month, a year, millennium, or so on? But that's always interesting. V'yisa mashalo v'yomar. And he lifted up, what do you want to translate his mashalo? He raised his parable, okay? One of the things that he says, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Erenu v'lo ata, Asherenu v'lo karov. I see it. It's not now. It's going to happen, but it's not so close. Derach kochav miYakov v'kam shevet miYisrael u'machatz pa'atei Moav. So there's going to happen. This Derach kochav miYakov actually is used in the Gemara having messianic connotations to it. More likely than anything else, this is how Bar Kochva got his name, Derach Kochav miYakov. And I see him coming, somebody who is a star coming out of Jacob. But one of the things which is interesting is that what does it say it's going to happen? U'machatz patei Moav. Now, what does the word machatz mean? Crush. That Moav is going to be crushed. So therefore, that's what he's saying, is that you don't have a good future over here. In Yud Chet, moving from Moav to Edom, because they are the various players in this whole story here, or leading up to the story. Because remember, Edom as well said, no, you cannot go this way. V'ya Edom Yirasheh, v'ya Yirasheh Seir Oivav, Yisrael Osechayel. Again, when it comes down to it, the Jews are the ones who are going to be strong, the Jews are the ones who are going to be victorious, even in terms of Edom. V'yaret Amalek, and he took a look and he sees Amalek, and Amalek has always been in the background of this entire episode. V'yisama shalov v'yomar, reishit goyim Amalek, v'achrito adei oved. Amalek in the end is going to, they're the first to attack, but in the end they're going to be lost. Vayarita Keni. So who exactly is the Keni? So hold on to that question for the moment. What's going to happen to the Keni? Vayasima Shalova Yomar. Etan Moshevecha Vasim Besela Kinecha. Kimiel Va'er Kayin Adma Ashur Tishbecha. It's, by the way, not as clear what happens to the Keni over here. Essentially, it sounds more like advice when it comes to the Keni as opposed to prophecy. But let's figure out who these Kenir. The easiest way is to look at 6 before 5. Let's look at 6. It's in Shoftim. Ubnei Keni Chotein Moshe. Okay, did that give you a hint about who the Keni are? The Keni is the tribe from where Moshe's father-in-law comes from. So now, you normally will call this tribe Midian. So now you know that Keni is Midian. Source number 5 also talks about, it could be the other way around even, but hold on. Hema Kenima ba'im machmat avi beit rechev, that was in the Derei Yamim, in Shmuel Aleph. Vayomer Shaul el hakeni luchu suru redu mitoch amaleki, and then the pasuk continues there. Pen osifcha imo vata asita chesedim kol bnei Yisrael balotami mitzrayim v'yaser keni mitoch amalek. So now there's another piece of information that we just now learned about the. I'm going to switch the words. Instead of Keni, I'm going to call them Midian. Midian, or perhaps some of Midian. You can make that decision. One of the things which is challenging, and you can do what I did, and that is you can look at a map, and if you look at a map and just figure out, so where exactly did Midian live? And if you look at one map, then it may be very clear, but if you look at 5 maps, then it suddenly won't become clear, because the 5 maps will all have them in different places. So where did Midian live is challenging. Now, we just now got some information. What was that information? That they're being told, move away from Amalek. So what do you now know about them? Okay. So one is, okay, good. So we just now heard 2 possibilities, and they both may be correct. One is that they are somehow living near or amongst or with Amalek. Or the other possibility is that they're a nomadic. Nomadic would mean that they wander around, that they're like the Bedouin. Right, so now the question is, so where did Amalek live? So that's also, right, so where was Amalek? So Amalek was in the Negev. Amalek was down in the Negev. So most likely Midian as well was someplace down there in the Negev, called the Machtesh, go south someplace there, middle, I mean, there's nothing there. And most likely these are the tribes that are nomadic, that are wandering around, but that's the area that they seem to be wandering around in, and that's Amalek and Midian. But I'll say it again, go look at your maps, look this up, and try to figure out exactly where it was that they live. But the warning over here is interesting. There's the warning, at least by Shmuel, is that you should move away, and that may very well be the same connotation over here that Bilaam had said. Bilaam is giving them different advice. Let's just look at Rashi now. It's source number 8. Vayar et akini lefi shehoya kini takua etzel Amalek. So in case you needed me to work hard and to show you the various other psukim, Rashi, who knows everything, and I'm not exaggerating, Rashi, who knows everything, certainly in terms of the psukim in Tanakh, so he has a very clear picture over here, who are these Keni and what we're talking about. But he understands that Bilaam's advice is very similar to what Shmuel is going to say, and that is that they live the Takua, that's even stronger, Takua, Eitzel Amalek. They're stuck there right next to Amalek, in Shenemar, and he quotes the Pasuk that we just now saw, the Pasuk where Shaul speaks, and Vayomer Shaul Keni. Yiskiru achar Amalek nistakel begdulatan shel bnei Yitro shenemar bahem tiratim shimatim suchatim etan moshavecha tameani mehechen zachita lekach halo ata imi ayite ba'atzat tavo nechakamalo v'atan nityashavte be'etan u'ma'oz shel Yisrael. So Rashi, as he normally does, and this was a little hard because you have no idea what he's talking about yet. Rashi, as he normally does, just took from the Gemara, he takes from Chazal, and he weaves it back into the text, into the narrative. So what is it that he just now told us? What he told us is that there's a little surprise over here going on. And he actually gives us a subtext of what Bilaam is saying or thinking. And one of the things I hope you caught along the way, he goes, hold it, you were involved with me in giving the advice to Paro. So do you realize what he just now did? He just now took a Midrash, or Gemara, it's both, and mentioned the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So those of you who don't know it, so let me go back and mention it. According to the Midrash, Paro has 3 advisors. One advisor is Bilaam, one advisor is Yitro, and one advisor is Eov. Bilaam gets up and says, Balaam, final solution. And then, by the way, that's what's going on. There is a meeting that took place. This is the meeting about the final solution, how are we going to handle the Jews? And Bilam is absolutely, I don't know who he is, he's Goebbels, I don't know who he is in this. He gets up and he says, eradicate them all. Balaam. Bilam says, get rid of all of them. That's what the Gemara says. Yitro, according to this, he says, come on, it's unethical to kill all the people, and that's why Yitro ends up becoming a positive character. But I want to hold off on that for a moment. And Eov, according to this, remains silent. Eov has nothing to say. And the Rav has a very important essay where he deals with this, and one of the things that he mentions is that to understand, this is really commentary in the whole book of Eov, is that Eov suffers. But why does Eov suffer? Because he doesn't feel anybody else's suffering. Is that, let's put it differently. To be neutral in the face of genocide is not really neutrality. Switzerland, for all they want, can say, but we were neutral during World War II, so neutrality in the face of genocide is not ethical. And therefore, Eov is, by being neutral, Eov is silent. He doesn't speak. He has nothing to say. So therefore, Eov's silence is one which actually causes him to be punished, because the book of Eov starts that Eov is a wonderful person. He's very good. But Eov's very good is that he does no wrong. He doesn't do good. Be very careful in the book of Eov. He does no wrong. So that's very important. Somebody does no wrong. But it doesn't say that he does good either. So that's part of where this Midrash Gemara go in to have the sensitivity. But let's put Eov on the side. And over here, Bilam is having it's a little surprising to him. Now, the only reason why you can complain to me and say, hold it, what's so surprising? Wasn't Yitro the one who eventually said, you can't kill the Jews, but look at the way that Rashi's using this. You were involved with us in that discussion. You're guilty of war crimes as well. You were one of the people, you know, this may sound like a funny halacha. There's a halacha that he's mentioning. What's the halacha? What happens if you have a Beit Din? You have three judges in the Beit Din. Monetary issue. And it's two against one, and they vote for one side. They vote for Reuven against Shimon. And let's just say that they're wrong. So it's malpractice. They have to pay the money back. The judges do. Now, the one who voted for the other side, who had the right decision, he shouldn't have to pay. He has to pay as well. You know why? Because he's part of the court. But he voted against. He didn't convince them, correct. But he's part of the court. That because he's part of the court, he bears responsibility as well. And that seems to be, Bilam's quoting a halacha over here, at least through Rashi, and maybe I'm overreading it, but he's quoting the halacha over here and says, you were involved in this. You were there for the final solution. You know, but he's interesting, and how are you going to survive? But now just think for another second over here. See, I'm going to start all over again. We have a number of protagonists who were involved in the whole story. And perhaps we need to go back a little bit further to see who these protagonists really are. But we have Moav, we have Midian, we have Bilam. Bilam, we don't know who he is. He's a very slippery character. We don't know who he is. He's going to go back to his nation, he's going to go back to his people, but we don't exactly know who his people are. On the other hand, we have Moav and we have Midian, and anyone who has attended this class for a number of years knows very well who Moav and Midian is, because I've stressed it enough times. And that is that Moav is the child of Lot, who's the nephew of Avraham. Midian is the son of Avraham, who's born to one of the later relationships that Avraham has after the Pilagshim that he has later on. So over here, this Midian and Moav, what's interesting about the both of them is that neither of them come at least directly. So we just saw something interesting, and we have to understand it still. None of them come directly from Ham. It is going to be the nations from Ham who are going to be expelled from Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the descendants of Avraham may very well have certain rights, and maybe, is this also something we've suggested over the years, maybe the various promises that we've seen God make in terms of the borders of the land of Israel, maybe that includes the various children, family of Avraham, are the ones who are going to inherit that, and not just B'nai Yisrael, as disturbing as some of my ultra-nationalist friends. I'm nicer. I didn't call you fascist this time. Some of my ultra-nationalist friends, don't look at me. Don't look at me. I'll look at her. Yes. Yes, we know exactly who Amalek comes from. Amalek is the illegitimate grandson of Esav. So, let us now continue, because, you know, when we got to Edom, there God said, you know, you can't go to war with them. Why can't you go to war with them? Because they are children of Avraham. They have a right to be here. Who do you have a right to go to war with? The Amori you have the right to go to war with, and that from the Brit Habin Haftarim we heard. That you can't, you have to go off 400 years into our key. Why? Because the sin of the Amori is not going to be complete till then, that they will then deserve to be expelled. Who are the Amori? Amori then come from Cham. So the people from the Cham family are the ones who are going to be expelled from this area. The people who are from the Avram and maybe even the Terach family are the ones who have some kinds of rights over here. So that's very interesting. See, the Gemara calls Esav, it calls him Yisrael Mumarhu. That Esav is a sinful Jew. It's very funny to call him a sinful Jew. I mean, he's not Jewish. But I guess his mother was Jewish, his father was Jewish, then what's his status? Which means the Gemara sees Esav differently than it sees Yishmael. But nonetheless, the Gemara sees him as being within the family, at least potentially, more so than it sees Yishmael. Okay, let's just leave it at that for the moment. So over here, that I hope that was interesting. If you look at Rav Hirsch in Source 10, he's going back on this Kini thing, and he ends up saying, well, where do they come from? So let's go to the second line, what's underlined. Hayaze oto anaf shechotein Moshe nimnaimo. This is the same part of the family that Moshe's father-in-law belonged to. For who nispach li Yisrael ba'akvotav. See, that's what that wasn't clear in the Rashi. It was clear if you understood the Rashi, but it wasn't clear if you didn't understand the Rashi. The children of Yitro end up joining the Jewish people. Which means this vision, this prophecy, if you want the prophecy of Bilam, if you want the advice of Shaul, they end up joining us. They end up staying together with us. His other children, his family. He comes back. Yeah. Yitro's family, the Druzim claim to be descendants of Yitro. They have the same tradition that they joined us, and that's why some of them, although the Druze may be interesting in terms of this entire discussion, but let's just take a look over here, continue in Rav Hirsch. So he says, this was the part of the family from Yitro, and they're the ones who ended up following Israel. Bilam mazhir oto shelo yinatek et kasharav Yisrael v'lo yachdal l'shevet b'kirbo. So Bilam warns them about this. Bilam's advice is to Midian, join the Jews. And by the way, don't join who? This is pretty clear. Amalek. So that's really interesting. They're with Amalek, but no, that's a really bad idea because in terms of our relationship with Amalek, it's not the best or healthiest relationship. Yimo shavo itan sham. Yisamet kino b'sela hazeh shabachar bo v'al yachzor legezek kayin shiatzam imenu. It's very interesting that he's connecting this back to some kind of a Kayin side of the world, which is not a very good one. So, because it may very well take us back. Okay, but let's leave that. That will be too complicated. Okay, we need a little bit more background now. So, let's look at source 13, and then we're going to move back to 11. The 13 is the way that chapter 22. Is formulated, and we know that we're not so impressed with the chapters, we're more interested in other things. So where do the Jews live? They live in the plains of Moab. So Moab is important right now. And Balak and at this moment we don't know exactly who he is, we'll see in a moment, but he sees what the Jews did to the Emori. Now, if you just read that pasuk and you didn't pay attention to that pasuk, then you don't understand what's going on over here. But leave that for one moment, and we will try to understand it. Then vayagar Moav bnei Amaod ki ravu, and they have this fear. Vayakatz Moav bnei Israel, and they have this hatred. Vayoma Moav el zikne Midian, and that's the beginning of our confusion because that's the beginning of the confederacy of this joining together of Moav and Midian. They say to Midian, Atay kam ata. So now we know that Moab is involved. We know that Balak is the king of Moab. And we know that some reason he reaches out to Midian, and that we're not exactly clear with. And it's really at this point that we would need a map. But we know the Jews are sitting in the land of Moab, and Midian is actually pretty far away. They've actually passed by Midian already. They've passed by. They were most likely on the other side. Let's put it this way. They most likely came up on the Gulf of Aqaba. They came by Petra, which is why Aaron is probably buried on that side. So they're really coming up Jordan. And where Midian is most likely on, most likely, saying this is not all simple, they're most likely on the other side, but they're way past Midian already. So therefore, theoretically, it has nothing to do with this. Keep some things in mind about Midian. When Moshe... the Eilat side and not towards the Petra side. Now, keep in mind something, or maybe even for the Sinai, keep in mind something. When Moshe runs away from Egypt, where does he get to? He probably gets to around one of the first places and gets to Midian. Okay? Which I'll say it again, if Amalek is in the Negev, in the desert someplace, maybe even further down in the Sinai, so Midian is probably someplace in that area if that's where Moshe is running away to. So that would seem to be one of the... Yitro comes, travels back and forth. Yitro goes to Egypt, again, at least on the Midrashic level, or Yitro comes and sees the Jews in Sinai. So how far is he traveling? Now I'll go back to my place I'm coming, which means, again, how long is the traveling over here? So most likely Midian is going to be someplace which is going to be relatively close to wherever Egypt is. So more likely than not, the Jews have passed that already. They're further up where we are over here in the plains of Moab, again, more or less the other side of the Dead Sea, or more or less the other side of Jericho, in Jordan, or what you would call Jordan today, or what they called then, the plains of Moab. So that's why that source, again, it began with Vechanu Barvot Moab. They are in the plains of Moab. Now, if we did pay attention a little bit to the map, so they're sitting by Moab. Midian has nothing to do with this. So why in the world would Midian have gotten themselves involved? And that, incidentally, is going to be a very good question. Because why did they get dragged into this? Now, at that point, in Pasuk Hey, it says, V'yishlach malachim el Bilam ben Ba'or, Petorah, asher al ha-Nahar, Eretz Bnei Amo. Now, I always would have suspected that the Nahar, goes Euphrates is back, where Avram's from, all the way far. But there's something else that happens over here that at least I want you to notice the commentaries. And then we'll go further backward after we take a look at the commentaries over here. They send messengers. Who's the messengers from? Well, it says Malachim. Who are the messengers? So it says they go off and they tell the whole background. And Pusik Zion, Vayilchu Ziknei Moav Vizikne Midian. So who are the ones who go on this mission? Both people from Moab and Midian. So we have our confederacy. Uksamim biyadam. And they have magic in their hands. That's also quite interesting. Ksamim is magic, spells, if you will, occult. V'yavol Bil'am, and they come to Bil'am, your love, Devei Malak, and they give the message. V'yom alayim linu po alayla. He says to them, spend the night. V'ashivoti etchem devar kashe yidaber Hashem elai. And I'm going to tell you what God says to me. Now, all of us reading this, we'd like that pasuk. Why? Because then we like it, or maybe we don't like it. Because suddenly, we don't know who this Bil'am character is, and we know that Chazal don't like him. I mean, he gets probably more vilified than almost any other character. Every sin you can imagine, and some that perhaps even some of you couldn't imagine, he's accused of. And Bilam over here says something which is so surprising. He's saying, well, essentially, I am a monotheist, and therefore whatever God says, I'm going to do. And there may actually be disappointment in that, because when you continue, he says, you know, spend the night, v'yishvu sarei Moav im Bilam, and therefore the officers or the ministers of Moab, they stay with Bilam. Anybody have a question? Well, you should all have a question. So what happened to the people from Midian? He was sent, v'yichu ziknei Moav u'ziknei Midian, uksamim bi'adam. By the way, Ksamim Biadam, was that both of them, or was that only Midian? I'll read it again. So is the Yadam both, or only one? So hold on to that question as well, because something really interesting just now happened. And what is this? This is part of our whole confusion between Midian and Moab. What happened? Midian disappeared. So where did Midian go? Look at 14, the Dat Sekenim Ibali Atosot. Vishusare Moav Im Bilam. Vizikne Midian Lehechan Holchu. Where are the Midian people? What happened? So the Bali Tos would say, Kevin to Amrilo Linu Po Laila, once he said, spend the night, I'm going to find out from God what's going on. Holchulahem, they said, forget it, this is over. Klum Yesh Av Shesonevno, is there any father who hates his son? What's he saying? The Jews believe in this God. You're hold it. You're this great, with this great reputation. Your solution to all of this is that you're going to ask God what to do? So forget about it. This is not going to work out. They already know right then that this is not going to work out. Which means if he would have brought this Avodah Zarah, he would have brought Baal, and he would have brought this, he would have brought that. Okay, so then maybe there's a chance. You're going to go to God to curse the Jews? Like, so what are you talking about? This is just not going to work, and they leave. So that's a very interesting insight. Look at the Chizkuni. Vayishvu sarei Moavim bilam. Lefi shelo hayu sham makirim b'midyan. Nitachsanu im Bilam, aval zikne Midyan, shayu mimidyan, nitachsanu bi'ir im chavrehim. What did he just now say? He just now revealed to us that Bilam is really for Midyan. He just now revealed to us, or at least his understanding of this, is where did Midyan go? Meaning, people from Midyan and from Moab come. The ones from Moab need to be put up. Why do they need to be put up? Because they're strangers, they're foreigners. But the people from Midyan, they stay with family. Why? Because they're from Midyan. So therefore, the Chizkuni understands that Bilam is part of Midian. Now that's actually real interesting, because when this whole war is going to take place, again, what are we looking for? We're looking for separation and understanding the distinction between Moab and between Midian, and why are we going to war against Midian, and why are we giving Moab a pass? Especially realize another point, that the whole instigator in all this is Balak, and Balak is the king of Moab. So Moab, again, the girls come down and with Baal, and those are the girls of Moab. At the end, there's one person for Midian. One important person, a leader, the daughter of a king, a princess perhaps, from Midian. So Midian always seems to be on the side over here, but if Bilam is from Midian, at least as the theory of the Chizkuni goes, if Bilam is from Midian, and therefore the leader's over here, and there may actually be more from Midian that we recognize, but I need to go back a little bit more to at least understand what upset Moab so much. And that is going back to Source 11. Source 11 is that towards the end of the parasha, a couple of weeks ago, where we're told that they ask Edom for permission to go, and Edom says no, and then they come to Sichon. Now, who is Sichon? V'lo natan Sichon Yisrael avor b'gvulo. Sichon is the king of the Emori. Now, Emori, lights should go off by Emori. Why? Because the Emori are the ones who are being kicked out of here. So the Sichon, the king of the Emori, says, no, you can't come here. And they go to war. Now, realize the incredible significance of all this. One, we didn't realize it at the time, but the conquest of the land of Israel has begun. For two reasons. One, it's the Emori. And that was really the point. That was the point from the Brit Bein HaBetarim, the Emori. The second point is that we don't know it yet, but we'll find out soon enough that a couple of tribes are going to end up living over here on this side. Maybe they're supposed to, maybe they're not supposed to, but they're going to end up living over here as well, which means in retrospect, when I go back and I say, okay, so when was it that the Jews began to capture the land which the 12 tribes would eventually live in? So this is it. This just now happened. The other thing which is interesting is Me'arnon ad Yabok. You should all remember the Yabok. The Yabok is what Yaakov passed by when he comes into Israel. So it's interesting that Yaakov goes off into Galut and he's all the way far up north. And the children of Yaakov go off into Galut and they're all the way down south. And both of them, when they're going to cross into Israel, they're going to cross in more or less from around the same area. And now they're back there by the Yabok, coming from that same point. But then it said, Ad B'nai Amon. So who are the B'nai Amon? The B'nai Amon is the brother of Moab. Okay. V'yikach Yisrael kol ha'arim ha'eila, v'yeshiv Yisrael b'kol arei ha'emori, b'cheshbon. So now you realize that we've already started to take the land of the Emori. Ki cheshbon ir Sichon melech Emorihi, because Cheshbon was the city of Sichon, the king of the Emori. V'hu nucham b'melech Moab. Now here's a little background. He had previously had a war with Moab harishon. V'hu nucham b'melech Moab harishon, an earlier or first king of Moab. V'yikachet kol artso miyado ad Arnon, and he took away a whole bunch of land from Moab. Alkein yomru hamoshlim, we're back to our moshlim again. B'nei cheshbon tibnei v'tuchnen ir sichon, ki eish yatzah mi'cheshbon lava mikir at sichon, ach la'ar Moab ba'alei ba'mot Arnon. Oy lecha Moab avadata am kimosh. Anybody know what kimosh is? Kimosh is the idolatry of Moab. So it says, Oy lecha Moab, avadata am Kimosh. The people of Kimosh you've lost. So sometimes we don't realize the polemic. All you have to do here is look at Rashi or the Ibn Ezra, who will tell you, and this is not an imagination, this is These are psukim. In Shoftim Perek Yud Aleph, your homework will be, and this should be easy because this was the Haftorah, we have Kamosh over here as describing as, and it's the exact background of this Perek Yud Aleph, Yirmiyahu Perek Memchet. That's also your homework to read the entire chapter, because that's what it talks about. It talks about these people who are the people of Moab and how they are the people of Kemosh. That's who they serve. What's interesting about this, and to me I think should be particularly intriguing, and that is that if the Moabite deity is Kemosh, then why in the world did the girls from Moab introduce Baal? I know for you it's real easy because, you know, idolatries are never exclusive, right? The Baal Peor. Sorry. Introduce Baal Peor. So what are they doing with Baal Peor? This is their god. Now, it could be, again, when it comes to idolatry, there's no exclusivity, and I will be honest with you, I did not do enough research to find out exactly who it is that they are. But I will read you one thing. You know, Aryeh Kaplan did a wonderful, unbelievable job in his Chumash that he translated into English, the English translation. It's not a translation, it's an interpretation. I just want to read you his footnote on Kemosh. Moabite deity, possibly a war god. And he says, see, Judges, Kings, Jeremiah, and so on. It is said to be a natural formation of black rock in the form of a woman. So that I thought was quite interesting. Which tribe are we talking about now?
Moab.
Who does Moab come from? Lot. Do you know any formation that has to be... Anyway, the daughters of Lot is interesting. But anyway, I just thought that was a very interesting suggestion, that is what this Kemosh is. And Kemosh has been defeated, but where does Baal Peor come into all of this? So let's... Well, I'll tell you where it comes in. Let's go back and understand things militarily and understand things theologically. On a military level, why exactly is Balak all upset? He's all upset because the Jews now have conquered a land. By the way, they conquered a land that they actually had no right to conquer, and they theoretically would have had no ability to conquer. If you look at Rashi in Source 12 writes... V'hu nilcham, lama hu tzrach li katev? Why did this need to be written? L'fi shenemar al tatzer et Moav, because it says that you cannot go in battle against Moav. V'cheshbon mishal Moav haita. And this place, Cheshbon, ends up being the place of Moav. Katav lanu shesichon lachamehem va'al yado tahara liYisrael. And it became purified for Israel in this way. I hope you like that turn of phrase. Anyone understand what he said? That Israel had no right to conquer the land for Moab. So what happened? Moab had a war with the Amori. And the Amori took this land from Moab. And the Jews took the land from the Amori. So now, as far as Moab is concerned, they would call this land Moabite occupied territory. And as far as the Israelites are concerned, what are you talking about? There was a war with Sichon, and we took it when we conquered Sichon, and this has nothing to do with you anymore. But they say, no, this is our ancestral land. And again, the irony is that we would have had no right to take that land other than the fact that they went to war and they lost that land already. Sorry, you lost it to Sichon. So therefore, when Sichon had it, when the Amori had it, they had nothing to say about this. But as soon as the Jews get it, now they get themselves all worked up. And that's why they're all troubled over here. Okay? So, I don't know why it should sound familiar. But this should be then interesting, because this is the background. If you didn't notice it was the background, that's what the Pasuk said. Vayar Balak ben Tziporit kol asher asai Yisrael le'emori. He saw what they did to the Emori. What did they do to the Emori? It's not that they defeated the Amori. This is not purely a political, oh, look how strong are they, beat the Amori. No. They took our land from the Amori. They're sitting in our land and we need to do something. So they turned to Midian. Now that's interesting because let's now work a little bit harder. And I asked you before where Midian came from. So take a look at Source 22, because Source 22 is the Rashi on the Pasuk, which I'm not quoting, but what does it say? It says that Avram had more children, and among them are Midian and so on, and it says that he sent them all to the east. He sent them outside of Eretz Canaan, and he sent them eastward. How east did they go? So theoretically, they go off someplace. How, where they end up, I don't know. But look what it says. But Avram gives them presents. Natan le matanot. So Rashi's quoting from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Pirish rabotenu shen tumma masar lahem. That he gave them powers of the occult. So that's really interesting in terms of Balak turning from Moab, turning to Midian, biksamim bayad, which and going to Bilam, which now, again, I'm going with the Chizkuni, because you could certainly argue with what I'm saying now in terms of where Bilam is really from, but I want you to follow this logic. Balak is upset for Moab because the Jews have taken his land, which had been temporarily, as far as he's concerned, with the Amori, and now I need to get it back. He turns to Midian, and we can't figure out why Midian got involved in this, and we still can't figure out why Midian got involved in this, but now we may have better insight why he turned to Midian, because Midian seems to have this reputation of having this power of the occult. It could very well be that who is the chief rabbi of Midian in the sense that who's the chief person involved in the occult, and that's Bilam. And that's what we just now had seen, that Moab and Midian go, and it says, and they are carrying, we're not sure who the they are, I'm suggesting that they may be more likely the Midian than Moab, and they go in to see Bilam. Bilam says, stay here the night. One interpretation was that, where did Midian disappear to? Midian disappeared, oh, they're dealing with God, forget about this. And the other interpretation is they go to their own homes, their own friends, their cousins, because they are in Midian. So that gives us a little bit more background, but I want to go I want to work a little bit harder right now. Let's see how much time we have. Okay, I want to work a little bit harder now. And actually, yeah, I want to work a little harder now and really try to define our two protagonists. And it seems to be more and more, if you're looking for a theme for this year as we're finishing the Sefer Bamidbar, it seems, right, this is our last class on Bamidbar, Bli Neder. It seems to be more and more necessary to understand Bamidbar to have understood Bereshit properly, because there just seems to be things that we need to pick up. Can we think together now about the difference between Moab and Midian? So there's a little bit more we need to know about Midian. One thing that we know about them is, well, Moab and Midian both have, well, there's something illegitimate. I will point out another thing which I found really interesting. The land which Reuven ends up taking, as far as I can tell, but again, I'm going to admit that the maps are very difficult. As far as I can tell, the land that Reuven ends up taking is the land that Moab lost, is the land that we took from Seir. It's that same land. So therefore, the displaced Reuven ends up identifying in a certain way with the displaced Moab and taking the land from Moab, which was then taken by the Amori. So there may be something over here, but it's more or less, it's that exact area that he ends up asking for and receiving. So let's go back a second. Who is Moab? Moab is the son of Lot and his daughters. What happened at the very end of last week's parasha? The daughters of Moab, the Benot Moab, come down. So where does that come from? So the easy way of looking at this is saying, well, the daughters of Moab never had such, or Lot never had such a great reputation. But I want to point out two more things about this, which again, maybe will give us a little bit more insight. In source 28, this is when the angels appear in stone. One thing that happens is in Pasuk Gimel, Vayitzar b'ma'od v'yasur elav yavol beito, he begs them, come, v'yasu lahem mishteh, and he makes for them a mishteh. There is a difference between mishteh and se'udah. What is a se'udah? Is a meal. What is a mishteh? It's a meal, it's drinking, mishteh, which means he serves them wine. One of the things that we noted, at least on the midrashic level last week, was it just the midrashic level? That the girls of Moab came in and they started to give wine. So we're on a cultural level, where did this drinking begin? So we see Lot is already serving the wine to his guests. Continuing in Pasuk Zayin, Chet, they come knocking on the door. Who's knocking on the door? All of the Sodomites. I'm sorry, I have no other way of putting that. And what does Lot say to them? Pasuk Chet, Hinena li shtei banot, ashlo yodu ish, otzina ethen alechem, vasulam ketov b'nechem. He is willing to sacrifice his daughters for whatever reason, and you have every reason to suspect that this is in terms of a sexual way. So daughters growing up in this house with wine, and daughters being objectified and being used and being bartered and so on. So again, what kind of message is over here? When we get later on in the same chapter where the daughters of Lot end up sleeping with Lot, so how surprised are you in terms of the breakdown of morality just based upon what we've heard previously? And what do? They give him to drink. They get him drunk. What I'm just saying is the daughters of Lot giving their father wine and then drinking with him and then sleeping with him, it had its source in the same chapter right before this by Lot himself being, you know, being the guy who's pouring all the wine and then offering his daughters over here. So then when we get to the end of last week's parsha, by the Benot Moav offering wine and sleeping around and so on, so then why was all that surprising? But there is something which is interesting and important. Why does Lot do this? Why does Lot behave in, and it is a bizarre way. And it is bizarre. So maybe before I answer or let any of you answer this question, why Lot behaves this way, there is a really interesting midrashic background that we need to know. Who was Lot's father? Okay, you can guess out of it was 50-50 there. Haran. And what happened to Haran? Haran died. Okay, actually, most people from Bereshit died, but he died. He died before his father. He died young, and it seems that Avram becomes a type of a father for him. He becomes a type of a son for him, and so on. It's also interesting that he has this possibility of living with Avram, and he separates from Avram. And where does he choose to go? He goes to Sodom. He moves over. That seems to be a very interesting parallel in terms of what eventually happens with Reuven and God and so on, where they move over and they separate from the others and they want to go to the same side. And linguistically, there are connections as well. Pause. What happened to Haran? So I want to mention the Midrash. The Midrash says that he was sitting on the fence, Haran, that he was sitting on the fence, and he was watching the Nimrod-Avram controversy. And when Avram gets thrown into the furnace, he says that if Avram dies, he's joining Nimrod, but if Avram survives, he's joining Avraham. Avram survives, so it says that he then goes into the furnace as well, but he died. That's the Midrashic background of it, which seems to... So what is that? That is this misguided... Okay, one, misguided, dramatic behavior, which may tell us far more about Lot and his children than it actually ever did about Haran. But when we read this, we just see this, oh, that's why Haran died, and we just stop right there. But if now we go down to, again, misguided, dramatic behavior, so Lot is perfect. What's his misguided, dramatic behavior? Here, take my daughters. And you're saying, are you crazy? But what is motivating him? He's scared. He's scared that the mob over here is going to kill him. So he's trying to placate the mob, but again, he makes this dramatic, misguided offer, and that ends up perhaps having an impact on this people. What do his daughters do? They also make a dramatic, misguided choice, but it's, of course, they're scared. And they're scared because they think that there's no one else left in the world, and therefore this is what we need to do. So again, dramatic, misguided is what they do. So when the Benot Moav come in the end of last week's parsha, and they're pouring the wine and they're sleeping with these other people, and again, the interesting thing is what happened to their god, why they move over to Baal Peor. So it could be because their god has proven to be very weak. It could be, what did Bilam say? What did Bilam say to them? Well, actually, Bilam said, you're going to be destroyed by them. To Moab, he says, you're going to be destroyed by them. Midian, he gives advice, you better join. So I want to pause now again. And what I'm telling you now, Chazal say, but not the way that I just now said it. Chazal just said it in one line. Their one line is, the difference between Moab and Midian is that Moab is scared and that Midian has nothing to do with this. Midian got involved in something that has nothing to do with them. Moab, on the other hand, is scared. So somebody who's scared and defending their own land or defending something, so you understand, when someone has nothing to do with this and gets themselves involved, so then it's completely different. But I'm saying that part we can find in Chazal. Giving the background to understand Moab, so I think that's important. But let me go a little bit further to perhaps what else we understand about Midian. Now, one thing about Midian that, if you didn't know this, but this is mentioned already by Chazal and Rashi hints and others, that Pinchas was a descendant of Midian as well. Pinchas was a descendant of Midian, and his grandfather, well, actually, he's a descendant of Midian, and we're also told he's a descendant of Yosef. Is that confusing to everybody right now? Okay, totally confusing. So let's take a look then, so at least we should see this. In source number 20, the Midrash Agadah, Pinchas ben Elazar, ma ra'a liyaches lePinchas, why does it ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen? Why? Lefisha yimavazin noto, people were humiliating him, va'omim ru'u ben putizeh, ben benotav shel Yitro. This guy, Pinchas, the son of the daughters of Yitro, Kohen Midian. Essentially, this, right, and what was he? Avi imo, mifatem agalim vodazara. His grandfather, and where does he get it from? It's quoted in the Pasuk in Shmot. Ve'elazar ben Aaron lakachlu mibnot pitu puti'el lo le'isha. Remember one thing about Yitro. He's got many, many names. So over here, this is one of the names assumed by Yitro. So over here it says that this is where Pinchas came from. Lo le'isha v'teil lo, it's Pinchas. Rashi in 21 on the Pasuk in Shmot writes, Mibnot pituel mizera Yitro. And then he also says, Umizera Yosef. So this is going to be too hard for me in the next minute to explain, that according to Chazal, Pinchas is from Yitro. Again, he's from Aaron, he's from Levi, he's from Yitro, and he's from Yosef. Now the bringing of Yosef in over here, there's also a very important reason. So let's go back to Midian. Midian seems to get themselves. What did I say about the difference between Moab and Midian? Moab was scared. Moab thinks that Israel took their land. Moab is right there geographically and they want their land back. Midian, on the other hand, doesn't live near her geographically. Midian's getting involved in something which has nothing to do with them. Did Midian ever before get involved in something that had nothing to do with them? Yeah, Mechirat Yosef. Right there in the middle of the narrative of Mechirat Yosef, right, the Jews are there, they see Ishmael, and suddenly Midian isn't there in the middle. That's what Midian does. Midian gets involved, something has nothing to do with them. When we even say that Yitro was one of the advisors over there for Paro, this has nothing to do with you. Why are you getting involved? Why? By the way, if we're right what we're saying, then two of the advisors actually were for Midian, if Bilam is as well. So Bilam and Yitro are for Midian, and why are you getting involved in all of this? But again, this has nothing to do with you. Why are you getting involved in this? But the bigger fear about Midian is something else. Midian is somebody, when you said before that they, nomads, was that the word that you used? They're nomads geographically, but they're also nomads in terms of their alliance or allegiance. That they're willing to move from one place to the other. If on the one hand you can be with Amalek, on the other hand you can be among, again, I'm not exaggerating now, according to Chazal, they end up becoming among the judges who were sitting by the Lishkar HaGazit. That they're on the one hand, and why judges? Because there's poetic beauty in that. But it's not just poetic beauty, because it's Yitro who gives the advice to Moshe on how to become, how the judicial system should work. On the other hand, we find his descendants actually involved in the judicial system. So that's just so interesting that we have something over here which is fascinating. Is Midian gets involved in things that have nothing to do with them. They move from one place to the other. And there's a danger involved in that. Because what's the danger? Because if you get involved with Amalek and you're giving good advice to Amalek, because you are the kind of people who give advice, because where do we see advice? That's exactly the point. Yitro comes in and gives advice to Moshe. But what is the Midrash saying? He also gives advice to Paro. So therefore, Midian is someone for sale. That may be part of what we had seen, the desire to put Bilam involved in this. You pay Bilam a price, he'll give you advice. You want to curse somebody, he's there. He's basically has no real allegiance. He's willing to join whichever side. And therefore, Bilam ends up giving this advice to Midian. Listen, Midian, as much as you guys like to be the ones who are, I'm not going to call them neutral, because they're not neutral. They're the ones who are willing to be with anyone. So here's the advice. If you join Amalek, you will be destroyed. Chazal understand the background of this Milchemet Midian. They said, this is the source. If somebody comes to kill you, go kill them first. Because they see that within Midian is Amalek. They see Midian as being part of Amalek. Which means if I would have changed the name now, and instead of saying that it says, go to war against Amalek instead of Midian, none of you would give me a hard time. You wouldn't even say, well, this is terrible. And so, no, this is Amalek. They swore to kill us. Now, to realize that historically, these are the people who are aligned with Amalek. They live next to them. They marry with them. They're one of them. They see themselves as one of them. And that's what Bilam has to get up and say. You want to survive? You're on the wrong side of this. You've picked the wrong side. You want to survive? You better join the Jews and don't join Amalek. So the war against Midian is a war against Amalek. That's what this war is, but it's even more interesting. It's the war against Amalek in terms of Amalek's proxy and advisor and so on, which means these are the ones who were the brains behind what was going on with Moab. Moab, they're scared. Moab, we understand why they're scared geographically. Moab is defeated. Their God was defeated. The very fact that they're involved in Baal Peor right now, as I'm going to say it again, is very interesting, but they are a defeated people. The Benot Moab have come to this conclusion. They do what Benot Lot do. And what's that? They make dramatic, bad decisions, and they're trying to do all that they can. They're trying to join the Jews the way that they know how to join. And how do they know? From the day that Lot said, listen, let's be friends. Why don't you take my daughters? So here's some wine, take my daughters. So that's what Benot Moab know. That's what they do. Again, going all the way back to Haran, dramatic, bad decisions, but they're not the ones that we need to go to war with. The ones we need to go to war with are the ones who are willing to give advice about genocide, even though with Yitro we're told that Yitro himself ends up becoming a positive character and he says not to do it. He's still involved in those discussions. He was to go sitting at the table with Hitler. He's the one who feels fine being an advisor over there. So I'm saying that's what the Midrash is saying, but then he joins Amalek. So when they join Amalek, so again, we know exactly then what's going on. But Bilaam says that you can be redeemed. So that's really what's interesting, is that as we move further in history, we have a war against Midian. Our war against Midian is very parallel to the war against Amalek. It may even be a subcategory of that same battle. But at the end of the day, those in Midian who end up staying with Amalek, so there's going to be a certain future over there. Those in Midian who then come back and understand what Bilaam is saying, we need to join the Jews, so they're successful as well. So Midian becomes really interesting. It's this, where does Midian come from? Let's go all the way back one more time. Where does Midian come from? From Avraham. So now the question is, do they feel this connection with Avraham, or do they feel this connection with the displaced and other rejected children of Avraham? Again, he asked who Amalek is. Amalek is this illegitimate child of Esav, or Esav's son, illegitimate grandchild. Do they feel associated with the illegitimate grandchildren because they see they have something in common, or do they feel that they have something more in common ultimately with Bnei Yisrael themselves? When they choose to be with Bnei Yisrael, they marry in. Pinchas comes from there. Moshe's children come from there. When they and they end up joining and coming back, as we see later on in the Navi, they're fine. When they move away, then the danger over here is where they move to, which means they're either black or white. It's extremes. It's either yes or no. It's with them, it's extreme, one way or the other. They don't seem to be in the middle. And that seems to be exactly why, specifically, Midian is the one that poses more of a problem, and that's why the war is against Midian. According to Chazal, Pinchas' lineage, his mother was a daughter of Yitro. Where Yosef comes in, it had to have been from a grandmother, come from the Yosef line. And that's what Chazal say over here, that he comes. So therefore, part of the revenge over here is revenge against Mechira at Yosef. But again, I don't want you to be that specific. It's not just Mechira at Yosef. It's that Midian is always getting involved in things they shouldn't be involved in, and therefore they will eventually make bad decisions or good decisions, but that's going to be completely up to them. Shabbat Shalom.